This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Here we go. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show goes now. Great to have you, America. What up, upstate North, South Carolina? Where am I? I'm struggling today.
It's going to be all right. Would you like me to come over and give you a pat on the back?
No, I think I'm going to make it.
We're good.
I think I'm going to make it. I think we're going to get through this, okay? But we're going to find out. I can't, like, get the weird thing where like one ear is like off pressure. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You got like the, feel like a bubble's in your ear.
It's that time of year because sinuses, it and maybe you slept on that side and it drained more on that side. Yes.
Yeah, like I'm doing that weird thing where I look like a fish trying to equalize, and I can't.
Is that what a fish trying to equalize looks like? I don't know.
No, I look like a fish.
Okay.
As I am trying to like equalize the, it sucks. It sucks. You know what doesn't suck? This show, the Rob Brown Show on the Fan
Upstate. Are you sure? Are you absolutely sure?
I mean, three South Carolina Broadcasters Association Sports Talk Radio Show with a year award trophy say.
Oh, yeah, there is that. Right. There's that.
I may be biased towards us, but I feel like we're doing okay. Hey, again, maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I feel like we're doing okay. Hey! We say we talk about some stuff. What do you say we get to some stuff here on the show? By the way, you guys had some takes on this traveling conversation from the last segment. So I'm going to circle back around to those here in just a minute from right now. But it is 7:02 in the morning. You know what that means? That means it's time for us to tell you about the top three stories happening in sports. About the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office. It's time for us to do this. It's the water cooler cheat sheet. The top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your coworkers this morning. When you do this, is what you will be talking about. Let's get to item number one. Women's college basketball underway last night. The conclusion of round number two of the women's tournament. And there's a couple of news stories out of this one. First and foremost, one of the biggest threats to win the women's college basketball national championship coming into the tournament were the Southern California Trojans. They have gone from 9-1 odds yesterday to 22-1 odds today. Why? Because their star forward, Juju Watkins, is done for the year. Suffered a torn ACL in her right knee during the second round victory over Mississippi State last night. That, according to ESPN, a team spokesperson said last night that Juju Watkins will undergo season-ending surgery before beginning rehab. Just 5 minutes into USC's 96-59 win that sent the Trojans on to the Sweet 16 for the second straight season, Watkins drove to the basket on a fast break between two defenders, was fouled, her right knee buckled as she planted her leg, causing her to collapse to the floor, immediately grabbed her knee, stayed down on the court for over a minute before trainers were able to get out there, pick her up, and help her off the floor. The team announced at halftime that Watkins was being evaluated by medical staff and would not return. They announced after the game that her ACL was torn, and Juju Watkins, 1,709 points in her first two seasons, the second most by any player in Division I history. Through two seasons, only Kelsey Mitchell at Ohio State with 1,762 scored more in a two-year span to begin her career. In fact, Juju Watkins outscored Caitlin Clark and Cheryl Swoops in their first 2 years at Division I basketball. She is out for the remainder of this tournament. The other part of this story, South Carolina now knows who their Friday opponent in the Sweet 16 will be. They will face the Turtles, Maryland, with a 111-108 double overtime victory over the Alabama Crimson Tide last night. 28 points from Cheyenne Sellers. Sarah Tibiasu, 26 points, 24 out of Kayleen Smekel. This team was efficient, over 45% from the floor, 42.3% from the arc, and maybe most importantly, and most problematic for the Gamecocks, how about 46 rebounds, including 23 on the offensive side, 23 on the defensive side for the Maryland Turtles? The Terrapins wiping the glass last night. It kept them alive, and it earned them a victory. 5 p.m. on Friday, the Turtles and the Gamecocks down in Birmingham, Alabama, in the Women's Tournament Sweet 16. Let's get to item number two. Soccer story, but it's not American. Stick with me. I'm coming to American soccer later on the show because they were so bad in the final two games of the CONCACAF Nations League. They have gotten me and Alexi Lawless agreeing with each other. That doesn't happen often, people. FIFA president, former FIFA president Sepp Blatter, and France great Michael Platini both cleared of corruption charges by a Swiss court yesterday, 2.5 years after they were first acquitted of the same offenses. The pair, once amongst the most powerful figures in global footy, were cleared of fraud at the Extraordinary Appeals Chamber of the Swiss Criminal Court in the town of Muttens, near Basel, Switzerland.
All that sounds definitely legitimate, not made up at all. There's no way.
It definitely doesn't feel like something you hear about in like a really bad James Bond movie. Not just the Appeals Chamber of the Swiss Criminal Court, the Extraordinary Appeals Chamber of the Swiss Criminal Court.
Does that mean there are levels to their Swiss Appeals?
Yeah, is there like a regular, and then there's like a you know, above average appeals chamber?
Welcome
and then
to the mediocre appeals court.
The pretty good appeals chamber. And then you have one group of judges. I assume they wear like big powder wigs and robes with like leopard fur trim on it, and they are the Extraordinary Appeals Chamber. Anyway, The hearing came about after Swiss federal prosecutors appealed their 2022 acquittal at a lower court. I assume that's the mediocre.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they didn't have to go all the way down to the low one. This went down to the mediocre for sure.
Shockingly, both men denied the charges against them. The case related to a 2 million Swiss franc payment that Blatter authorized for Michael Platini, a former captain and manager of the French national team back in 2011. The payment was a consultancy fee paid to Platini for work carried out between 1998 and 2002 when the Frenchman said he had been partly deferred because FIFA lacked the funds to pay him in full immediately at the time. The scandal emerged in 2015 when Platini was president of European football's ruling body, UEFA, and ended his hopes of succeeding Blatter, who was forced out of FIFA over this same affair.
By the way, two million Swiss francs equals 2,267,278.
Director of research.
American dollars.
Yes. It's a lot of money.
Everybody wanted to know. So, I mean, sometimes you hear an astronomical number, and then when it's compared to American dollars, it ends up being like 50 cents. So, but in this case, it is a lot of money.
Yeah. A lot of money. Well over over $2.26 million that was owed to Platini, according to Sepp Blatter and FIFA. The Swiss were like, yeah, we don't buy that at all. And apparently it turns out that if it was bad, they didn't have enough to prove it. Just proving further, ladies and gentlemen, that if you would like to launder a bunch of money and get paid a lot to be corrupt, just join FIFA. You can get away with damn near anything. Item number three.
You sounded like you wasn't sure.
I am sure.
Okay, all right.
However, this seemed to, I don't know if it like slipped under the radar. I don't know if this is like, it's just not being taken seriously. I don't know. Last night, I was watching some college basketball coverage, as we obviously have both the men's and women's national championship tournaments taking place right now. And in preparation for talking today to make some Sweet 16 picks with those games getting set to be played on Thursday and Friday, I was watching some of the studio shows because, you know, no basketball, studio shows all we got. I'm watching some of the studio shows last night. And on CBS Sports, John Rothstein, who is kind of one of the leading voices in the college basketball landscape. He is actually one of my go-to guys when it comes to college basketball. Rothstein was on CBS Sports. And he said something that I went, blah, what now? I went, blah, what now? I know what I did. I broke my computer because I screwed up during the break.
Yeah, you're also doing something that someone else used to do.
He said,
you shouldn't do that.
And, of course, now I got to reset my whole thing. let me go with this. I'm going to play you this audio. And I'm going to play you this audio because I think this audio is important. But John Rothstein. Yeah, I know. It's on me. What do you want? John Rothstein said yesterday that there is a conversation happening right now in the college ranks. And of course, now I can't even get it to freaking open up. We're just having a day here, people. John Rothstein said that there are conversations happening right now in the NCAA to potentially change the baseline of eligibility for athletes. Rothstein said,
"Is this for grades?"
I'm still stalling over here, and it's not working.
So you said eligibility? You mean as far as
I mean in
grades?
Terms of years eligible to be played.
Oh,
Rothstein okay. said yesterday that the NCAA is considering allowing a fifth year of eligibility as the new baseline for college athletics.
Well, it worked during COVID. They were able to get some people 1 or 2 years, right?
They gave everybody that was in athletics during the COVID year one extra additional year of eligibility and moved it to 5. If you add that to a red shirt, it went to 6. If you add it to a medical red shirt, it went to 7. But remember, there's one more thing in play here. And I don't know that this is or is not part of it. But the NCAA has also recently decided to make the change that time played at the JUCO level does not count towards your eligibility. So now, theoretically, if a player played 2 years at JUCO, then went to a big school, took his red shirt. Remember, in football, you can play 4 games now on a red shirt. Took his red shirt. Then, let's say, took a medical red shirt. Okay? There's 5 years, pardon me, with his next year, 6 7. You could have college basketball, football, baseball players, whatever. Theoretically, playing 7 years of college athletics.
Do you know how much eligibility you have left? That's a lot of time.
I mean, if they make this change, apparently a freaking lot, dude. Like, apparently a lot. That's wild to me.
I only played 1 year and got hurt, so that would be a medical thing. And I didn't get to play. I was technically being redshirt. Oh, yeah.
Maybe Lonzo can get back in the game. Maybe there's a little bit left there for the great one.
Go play some JUCO a little bit, get back into some shape, and then head up to the big boys. Give me some NIL money.
I'm trying to tell you. I'm sure there will be folks waiting to throw money at the great one.
I could also work at the college radio station. I know I won't get paid anything, but I could have some fun.
So same as here. That's a joke. We're very happy with our jobs and paychecks. I was making a joke.
You know, you talked about our accolades earlier. Yeah, I really enjoy it. I like winning awards.
So, I do too. So I'm a big fan. We should do it again this year.
We should.
We really should. So, Texas said that's actually 9 years with red shirt. So we go JUCO, medical red shirt, regular red shirt, 5. Yes, you are correct. That is 9. I'm bad at math. That's why all my jobs are words jobs. 9 years of college athletics.
You could be 27?
27-year-olds. And if a kid does not go play college ball, but he doesn't do anything else, and he goes, you know, let's say he doesn't join a college team until he's 20, 21, you could have legitimately and genuinely 30-year-olds playing college basketball, college football.
So the whole thing, our athletes are going pro in something else. They're just going pro and being there and making enough money and NIL that they don't have to work when they're done with college.
Oh, here's Rothstein. So he does say in that clip.
He said degrees. Yeah, that's what they're there for. Huh?
He does say in that clip that, oh, hey, we ain't here to play school. That was one of your guys, Lonzo. We ain't here to play school.
He was right, though. He wasn't.
He did say in there that and I here's the thing. I don't know what Rothstein meant, and I will be following up this today. Because, again, this, like, isn't being talked about. But he said that would include a red. So does that mean 5 years? And if you redshirt, that is one of the 5 years? So you can still redshirt, but you'll only have 4 years? Does that mean redshirt plus 4 years? Does that mean redshirt and then 5 years? I don't know. What I do know is, apparently, this conversation's happening, according to John Rothstein. And I got to do some digging. But this isn't a story, in my opinion. This isn't a story that a guy who has made it to where John Rothstein is, like studio shows on major networks, this isn't a story you make up. This isn't a story you lie about. This isn't a story you get clout with. This is a story you report if and only if you can verify that it's happening. That you have knowledge that it is happening. Not a guess, not speculation. So for them to be having this convert, for John Rothstein to have this conversation, I find that really interesting. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. Because this would be, as he described it, a seismic shift. We'll talk more about it when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a couple of things about this story we were talking about to wrap up the water cooler cheat sheet. The first is that this story, because somebody texted and said, you're way late, Rob, this story was back in January. And the answer is yes and no. Because Rothstein said the same thing back in January. But when he said the same thing, there was a big pushback. There were other also respectable outlets that were saying that conversation is not taking place right now. And now apparently that conversation is being renewed. And so far, I have not seen any pushbacks. Now, Rothstein's initial report back in January was that the NCAA would be considering this change in early 2025. Well, we are now well into early 2025. In fact, I would say we are right up on the border of not early 2025 any longer. Somehow, as we celebrated New Year's Eve 3 nights ago, it's almost April. Like, damn.
Like next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, damn. So, I mean, sorry, wait. Where is it? Dadgummit. No, I can't. Of course I can't find it when I need it. Oh, I'll find it later. Anyway, like, damn. I got that clip somewhere.
That wasn't bad. I mean, you know.
There it is. Get him, Ron. So, we're now into early 2025, and Rothstein has now renewed the story that the NCAA is going to be discussing a fifth year of eligibility. Per reports, there is no real timetable regarding the change, but this apparently would remove the concept of a red shirt. So basically, everybody gets 5 years, but there are no more red shirts. Honestly, like, okay, I'm good with it, right? I'm good with it. The concept of a redshirt, especially as redshirts have been modified over the past couple of years, and now you can play in, what is it, a quarter of the games or whatever it is, 4 games in college football, and yet still have a redshirt. Like, what's the point? Let's just do 5 years. So that would remove one of those years. Now we're down to 8. What I don't know is if this would still remove a medical red shirt, right? So let's say it's year number 2 and you play 1 game, you're injured in game 1 or you're injured in game 2 and you're done for the season. Could you still get a medical red shirt for that? Does that bump it from 8 years back up to 9? Does it stay at 8? Does it come down more? I really don't know. And this is kind of one of those stories that, like, I almost want to hesitate to comment on it until I know what's coming out of this. I almost kind of want to hesitate. Again, it came up back in January, but there was pushback. There were big outlets saying, no, this conversation isn't happening right now. Now it seems that, at least so far, there's very little pushback on it. So I'm on one hand, I absolutely want to give you a bunch of commentary. On the other hand, I don't really know what to say about it. I'm on one hand, like, I'm not a huge fan of giving everybody 5 years of eligibility. But on the flip side, I kind of like the concept of saying, okay, when you enroll in college, you have 5 years. That's it. You have 5 years. We cut out the shenanigans with guys in red shirts playing 6 years or 7 years. We shut out coaches utilizing guys as effective strategic superstars. They can plug a guy in. He can play in like the four biggest games of the year, but still get his red shirt. You have other situations where you haven't played a guy all year, but then all of a sudden you get into the playoffs. Maybe you have a shock run to the playoffs and your back's against the wall. So you burn a kid's red shirt, but he didn't play in 8 of your 12 regular season games, so he could red shirt. But then you get into the last game and it's like, hey, kid, I know that you didn't get to play in every game. I know that you weren't a consistent roster member, but we need you now. So, like, we're going to go ahead and count this year against your eligibility, even though you did not get to participate the whole time because we planned on you being a redshirt. Like, get rid of that. Let's just have it where when you get into the game, you have 5 years. Clock starts, right? And, you know, I know it's going to suck that eventually we're going to have a kid in his fifth year of eligibility, and in week one, he's going to blow out a knee. In week one, torn ACL, he's done for the year, shut down for the season. And you got to go, dude, that sucks, but like that was your fifth year, right? Like your eligibility's over. But I think if you do anything else, you have programs that, start to massage the system a little bit. You have programs that kind of start to work the system for their roster, for their team's benefit.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, right? Right? I don't know, man. I did see a proposal from somebody on social media last night that said, new rule, anyone under 23 is eligible. Which I got to tell you, Lonzo, I read that last night. Anyone under the age of 23, when their season starts, is eligible to play. I don't know, like, what the dates line up for different sports, right? Like, that might put football at a disadvantage to basketball. Basketball starts later. That means they got a longer window of kids that graduated in a certain year. If you graduated in that year and you graduated at 17 because you were turning 18 the day after graduation or whatever, maybe that changes the game or whatever. I don't think it can be that simple. I do think it could be as simple as the day you enroll in your first school. The day you enroll in school number one, you're on a 5-year clock. You have 5 years to get as much in as you can. I don't care if you transfer to a different school all 5 years. I don't care if you earn $10 million of NIL money. That's all irrelevant to me. When you sign that scholarship, you have 5 seasons. It's going to suck if you blow out your ACL in year 5. But you have 5 years. That's what that 5 years is for. It is to give you 4 years of college ball plus one with a catastrophic injury or an illness or whatever that prevents you from playing for a season. Which I honestly think is fair. Because again, we have seen guys say, maybe not in this one, that is at least not that have stood out and made a game impact. But we have seen guys playing college ball that are 28 years old, 29 years old. It's like that. Damn, dog, you're old for an NBA guy. You're old for an NFL player. If you were in the NFL, we'd be putting the clock on your career right now. But you're out here playing college ball. I think 5 years from the day that you sign your scholarship or 5 seasons of your sport is fair, right? If you early enroll in spring, right? You enroll in whatever it is, February, January. It's been a long time since I went to college. If you early enroll and you're a football player, when week one rolls around, the clock starts for you. You have 5 seasons. No matter what happens, transfer anywhere you want to go, get the NIL money you want to get, play for whatever schools and coaches you want to play for and whatever parts of the country you want to play for, whatever you want to do, you have 5 football seasons. This kind of feels like one of those things that over the years, we have started to get unnecessarily complicated, right? With red shirt, red shirt, but you can do this and you can play this many games, but you can't do that because that's going to burn about. Like, I feel like we're being overly and unnecessarily complicated when it doesn't have to be. You have 5 seasons of your sport. Now there are some challenges. In fact, I'm reading a comment right now from a guy who covers college hockey. He said, college hockey, the traditional path is to play juniors right out of high school for a few years. Then they really only go to college once they're 21 to 23 years old. Like, I don't know. I don't know. We got a good hockey program. I kind of don't want to tinker with it too much. But on the flip side, like, are we putting development of international and professional hockey players above just college hockey? And I know, like, college hockey fans aren't going to love it because, man, if you've ever hung out with college hockey fans, they've got their own little bubble, their own little universe that they live in, aside from everybody else. Like, they live in their own little world where they've got their own little rules and traditions over there. Like, anytime you enact a rule, there's going to be a group of people that it is going to unfairly impact more than others. But I think, I could be wrong, and I'm open to conversation if anybody has thoughts deeper than mine about this. I heard this clip this morning. I was like, man, I feel like I've heard that from Rothstein before. And then I went and looked, and I'm like, okay, I did back in January, but there was a lot of pushback, and there were people from the NCAA saying, no, we're actually not having that conversation, so it kind of went by the wayside. He brought it up again, I think yesterday afternoon, and there's been no pushback so far. It's only been a day. Maybe the NCAA puts out a statement today. I don't know. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, there's a whole lot of complexity right now. There's a whole lot of complexity to this conversation right now. And I really do think it's gotten unnecessarily overcomplicated. I think it could be scaled down to when you enroll in a school, you have five seasons. You have five seasons to get it done, whatever you want to get done in college ball. Transfers, NIL, national championships, whatever. You have 5 years. After five seasons, you're done. Now, that doesn't necessarily fix anything because, again, what about guys who don't go to college? What about guys who are walk-ons and they get a scholarship? Does that extend? I don't know. I don't think so. I think once you enroll into college, you have 5 years. I think that's the easiest way to do it. I think going any further than that, you probably get to a point where you're overcomplicating things unnecessarily. But we'll see. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute. Got a bunch. So we got to get into some NBA. A lot of NBA news right now. Jason Tatum left a game last night with a busted up wheel. Still waiting to find out what happened with Steph Curry. Anthony Davis made his return for the Mavs last night. We got a lot going on in the NBA. We'll talk about that. Get some Major League Baseball talk as we are now 2 days from opening day. The Rob Brown Show rolls on after this. It's the Fan Upstate. All right, let's talk a little opening day baseball. The Atlanta Braves, kind of an interesting offseason for Atlanta in that a team saw their NL East streak come to an end. First time since 2017 that they did not win the NL East, but they still did make the playoffs. Despite the fact that this was the most injured team in Major League Baseball last year. And so I've told a bunch of Braves fans, on one hand, I'm disappointed I didn't really see the Braves, if you'll pardon the expression, swing for the fences. I would have liked to have seen them in that big move pool. And now I'm not saying that they needed to be fighting the Mets for Juan Soto or something like that. I am saying there were some big names out there. You lost Max Fried to the Yankees. You lost Chris Sale to the Baltimore Orioles. I really thought that there was a possibility the Braves could go in for a replacement. Specifically, pitching. Specifically, go get another starter. They really didn't do that. On the flip side, I am trying to remain optimistic here. And I'm trying to remain optimistic here because the rotation that the Braves have put together Charlie Morton. My bad. The rotation this team has put together isn't awful. Chris Sale last year had his healthiest season in 6 years, 168 innings pitched, worked a 3.18 ERA. He was very good. Reynaldo Lopez is a guy I'm interested in. A lot of questions last year whether or not Lopez would stay in the rotation after spending a few years in the bullpen. 26 games, 25 of them starts a 1.99 ERA. But did have some forearm and shoulder injuries after the All-Star break. Questions about those coming into the year. Spencer Schwellenbach. Revelation is a actually one of the reasons the Braves made the playoffs last year was because they didn't know who that guy was going to be. Spencer Schwellenbach steps in quarter of the way through the season. Pretty consistent dude last year. 173 innings pitched, 3.59 ERA, arrived from Double-A ball without a full season as a starter at any level, had 21 starts, went 4-1 with a 2.28 ERA against divisional opponents. And it was a good division last year. Grant Holmes had a phenomenal year last year. Spent a decade in the minors, got called up by the Braves to fill a need, A, in the rotation, and then moved into the pen, did relatively well. And A.J. Smith-Shawver. Obviously, Spencer Strider, probably going to miss some time early. When he does get called, I suspect he will go back probably into the three hole in the rotation on limited innings early while he recovers from Tommy John. They'll work him into that as they move forward. But it's really the lineup as the Braves figure out their pitching, because I will also say it's Alex Anthopoulos. I suspect the Atlanta Braves will be active at the trade deadline this year. They weren't really last year. It was kind of the first time in two or three years that the Braves didn't really try to make a splash at the deadline. I suspect they'll get back to that this year. In fact, my prognostication is, was, and has been that the reason the Braves did not go heavy during the offseason was because they kind of wanted to build up the assets so that when the deadline gets here, they can be players. They can look at teams that maybe had expectations coming into the year, did not live up to those, are selling pieces off. And because they did not put a gazillion dollars on the books in the offseason, like a lot of teams did, they'll have some assets stocked up. And they can go, not just get guys, because again, when you get a guy in the offseason, you are taking a gamble that guy is going to not just show up having the same form, but that they're going to show up having the same form coming out of the offseason. Whereas, if you wait till the break, you can watch guys in the season. You can pull a guy over who, if you go get a starting pitcher, has been starting pitching all year long. And you can evaluate what the season has looked like for that individual thus far. So I expect the Braves will be deadline players, but you got to get there first. How do you get there? If you're Atlanta, you're relying on the lineup, right? Which is why they went and got Jurickson Profar out of San Diego. 31 years of age. And this guy is, to me, the biggest question mark for the Atlanta Braves this year. Jurickson Profar had a career year last year for the Dodgers. For the Padres. Jurickson Profar had a career year for the Padres last year, but he is 31. Jurickson Profar had a career year last year for the Padres in a career that included at one point being cut from the Colorado Rockies. There have been seasons I think I could have made the Colorado Rockies, and I stink. That's why I quit playing baseball after high school, because I couldn't go any further than that. 3-year, $42 million deal. That's your leadoff guy. Does that change when Ronnie comes back? I don't know. But for right now, it is. Austin Riley at third base, played all but four games last year. One of the few spots that you did not deal with an injury last year was at third base. 36 home runs, 99 ribbies. Year before that, 21 through 23, played all but 10 games last year. 110 games, 19 home runs, 46 RBIs. I got my numbers backwards. That's my bad. Last year, did deal with some injuries. But after the broken hand, like this isn't a lingering injury deal. This isn't Austin Riley coming back off a torn ACL like Ronnie. This isn't him coming back from Tommy John's like Spencer Strider. He had a broken hand. Like, it happens. That heals up. Shouldn't be too much of a problem. Matty Ice Ice Baby, you know what Matt Olson is. Leader in home runs and RBIs. Last year, career worst slump through the first 99 games. Now, 16 homers, 54 RBIs, and 949 OPS in the final 63 games. Is he able to carry the second half of last year and not revert back to the first? Marcell Ozuna back in the DH spot. Last two seasons, kind of a career revival. 289, 79 home runs, 204 RBIs, and 916 OPS, a 148 OPS plus. The Big Bear is 34. He is in a career year this year. And whether it's with Atlanta or not, if he wants to stay in the show, he's going to have to keep those numbers up. Michael Harris II, hamstring strain last year. Sideline for 2 months. Ended up with a back strain, probably compensating for that hammy. Back in that slowed him down after that. Gold glove defender when he's healthy. Can he stay healthy? Ozzie Albies, 5'7", one of the best hitting second basemen, again, when he's healthy. Albies has played as many as 100 games just once in the past three seasons due to injuries. Speculation. The point that I'm making here when we talk about these Atlanta Braves for the 2025 season is this. If the lineup is healthy, it's as good as any 1-9 at the dish in the NL East. If the lineup is healthy, it's as good as, if not better, than any 1-9 in the field. Because even guys like Jared Kelenic, who had, let's say, erratic season with the Braves last night, who will likely be platooning in right field until Acuna comes back, and then Ronnie, when Ronnie comes back off a torn ACL, you're even going speculation with these guys. The fear, if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, is that the injury bug strikes again. I would like to think last year was just a weird year, just an anomaly of a year. But I'm also looking at some of the guys that got hurt last year, and they are guys that historically have had injury issues. The Braves have put together one of the best 1-9 lineups in the National League. The Braves have put together a defensive lineup that I genuinely believe is as good as anybody's in the National League. The problem is they've put a lineup that is as good as anybody in the National League at the dish and as good, if not better, than anybody in the field that is built almost exclusively, with very few exceptions, out of guys that have missed significant time the last 1 or 2 or 3 years. Or guys like Jurickson Profar that were really good but inconsistent. If the Braves get everything right, if these guys find a chemistry and stay healthy, the Braves are the second best team in the National League. I think they're better than the Phillies. I think they're definitively better than the Mets. If I look up and down the National League, I genuinely think the Braves, 1-9, when fully healthy, are as good as anybody else. I think they're the best team in the NL East. I think they're far and away the best team in the NL Central. And out in the West, I think the Dodgers are going to be good. The Diamondbacks are going to be good. The Padres are going to be good. I think the Braves are the second best team in the National League, and that's just because the Dodgers have built an all-time all-star roster that they literally owe over $1 billion to. The problem is, at almost every position, with the exception of first base, designated hitter, you're dealing with either sincere injury concerns or inconsistency throughout a career. If Jurickson Profar matches the year he had last year in San Diego, the Braves answered a huge question during the offseason. Who's going to be your stable outfielder until Acuna Jr. comes back? If Jurickson Profar's last year with the Padres was an anomaly, the Braves blew $42 million. When Ronnie comes back, 50-70 club, does that ACL, does multiple lower body injuries, knee injuries, change him away from being the guy that won the National League Most Valuable Player 2 years ago? Or is he the same guy? If he's the same guy, the Braves and Jurickson Profar is good. The Braves just built maybe the best defensive outfield and maybe the most electrifying offensive outfield in Major League Baseball. But But if one of those two guys doesn't live up to what Atlanta needs them to be, it's an average outfield. And if Ronnie's a different guy after the ACL and Profar's last year was an anomaly, it's a bad outfield. Just like that. So that's my concern. And I am not yet pushing the Atlanta Braves panic button, primarily because opening day's Thursday and it's Tuesday. I'm not there yet. What I am going to say, great one, is that on Thursday, when the season starts, and I will do my darndest, I'll do everything I can not to roll up in here on Friday morning and slam the panic button with Atlanta on the road at the Padres in day one.
That would be the earliest you've ever done that. I mean, at least give it a month or two.
We'll see. Because here's what I think. What I think is in probably a month, we'll know if Jurickson Profar was worth a three-year, $42 million contract. We will know within a month if the pitching staff that they have assembled is good enough. Here's the thing. They're not competing with the Dodgers. Honestly, I think the Phillies pitching staff is better. I think it's good enough.
So you don't see any of that stuff during the Grapefruit League?
Not really, because you're talking about games where guys are coming out and they're playing two innings, right? Very rarely are you giving your starters like full nine-inning games in spring training.
So it's not like preseason football where you put all your starters out there for at least a couple innings and then pull them?
Yeah, I mean, you may, but again, baseball is a different breed of cat. Baseball, you're talking about playing 5 to 7 games in a week. You're talking 3 to 6 at-bats every game. And you're talking, obviously, 10 times as many games. It's a very streaky sport. And so, to me, for a team like Atlanta to be competitive in the division, for a team like Atlanta to be competitive in the National League, what I need is not just the guys that were injured last year to be able to stay healthy, knowing everything that goes into being a baseball team. When you're on the road for weeks at a time, you're back home, you're playing hard, you're not playing hard, you're getting days off, you're not getting days off, etc. To keep their bodies in shape and stay healthy. But it's also, again, it's consistency. Is Chris Sale going to be able to be the same guy this year? Is Spencer Strider going to come back from Tommy John and have the same heat? Is Jurickson Profar's 2023-24 season an anomaly? Or is that who he is? Is Ronnie going to come back from ACL surgery and be able to steal bases with the same equivalency from his NL MVP year? If more of those, if the same number of those questions are no's as yeses, the Braves aren't winning the division. And frankly, they won't be good enough to win probably the wild card round, because they'll end up going up against Philly in round one or somebody like that. So again, I'm going to do my best to hold off on the Braves panic buzzer until at least a month into the season, like a month from Thursday. I'll do my best. But I also think, like Profar, we're going to know in 2 weeks if he's the same guy or not. If he comes out and he's batting 193 through the first 2 weeks, it's going to be like, all right, we wasted money. If Chris Sale comes out and he's getting battered to a 5.2 ERA, we're going to know, uh-oh, we're in trouble. Like, that's going to be what it is. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think the definition of cautiously optimistic right now. Definition of it. I'm also the definition of late for this break. So, here's Lonzo with a sports flash.
Nah, man, you're right on time. Flurry of coaches are already on their way to new schools in college hoops. UNLV is hiring Josh Pastner as its next coach on a 5-year deal. 14-year NBA vet Mike Bibby has agreed to become the head coach of Sacramento State. After knocking off Texas in the play-in tournament, Xavier coach Sean Miller is headed to Texas to replace Rodney Terry a day after Colorado State were eliminated on a Maryland buzzer beater. Their coach, Nico Medved, is headed to Minnesota, and Ryan Odom is now taking over Virginia. That's It's a lot. South Carolina's next opponent in the women's tournament has been determined. The Gamecocks will take on number 4 seed Maryland, who knocked off Alabama last night, 111-108 in a double overtime thriller. The Terrapins and Gamecocks will meet Friday afternoon in Birmingham. Hey, tune in this afternoon, 3 to 7 p.m. for Wire to Wire. Cole Bryson and Diesel ride shotgun on your drive home. Get you up to date on all the latest local and national sports news right here on The Fan.